April 15, 2021. It's a lot from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Happy Thursday. Started off with John Coltrane doing Blue Train. I think it was his second solo record. Only one for Blue Note. Nels Klein records for Blue Note these days. Then we had Colin Edwin. Hell Within Your Hands. And Brother Matt at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, because it's still a great quarantine mode, but I'm not totally man alone, people. because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Mr. Colin Edwin with me. Welcome aboard, Colin.
Hey, hello.
Yeah. Now, what town are you talking to me from?
It's just near London. So, you head out of London north and I'm just there.
And what's it called?
It's called Apsley, little place.
But next to a huge ass thing, part of a metro, whatever. Look, I want to get into your journey through music, so please bring me your earliest musical recollection, please.
My earliest musical recollection? Well, I grew up in a house with two sisters and a brother who all played instruments, and my father played jazz guitar, so I was completely surrounded by music from a really, really young age. They were all older than me, my siblings, so my brother playing classical guitar was probably the first thing I can remember.
Okay, that's bitching environment.
Especially
if you're going to become a music man down the road yourself, you know. So all these instruments in the pad, as a boy and shit, did you jump on any?
Well, actually, no. That's the weird thing is I didn't take to music until I was 15. So I was never encouraged to learn an instrument or anything else. I just kind of gravitated towards it.
What can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, none of that. The only thing I remember doing was in my last year of high school, a friend of mine persuaded me to play in the sort of rock and roll musical that they put on.
Where'd you play?
So I played bass, I didn't want to do it. And then I remember actually I was the only one that turned up to all the rehearsals and, I was the only one that took it seriously.
Yeah, but that's showing some fucking, spinal fortitude or some shit. How long were you on the bass at that time?
I picked up a bass when I was about 15. My father bought me this really cheap secondhand, like Fender Jazz copy thing.
But why?
I think he didn't believe that I was going to do it. You know, it'd been so long and I'd been surrounded by instruments and music, you know, that he probably didn't think I was ever going to bother. You know, he thought it was a flash in the pan. I was just, so he kind of bought me this thing, cheap thing, just to sort of keep me happy.
But Colin, why bass?
Well, that's a good question. I think I was playing, you know, I was spending so much time listening to music and that time in the 80s, there was a lot of really upfront bass playing going on sort of pop records and things that you just hear, you know, all kinds of music, you know. So I was sort of interested in the bass. And then I think maybe because my brother was a quite an accomplished sort of classical guitar player that, you know, my dad didn't want to have any kind of rivalry.
Okay, that makes sense. But so he kind of chose bass for you. Like D. Boone's Ma picked bass for me. I didn't know fucking well. You talk about you listen to a lot of music. Can you tell me the first record you bought with your own money?
Yeah. The first record I bought with my own money was The Rise and Fall by Madness.
Okay, there's some fucking bass, big bass pepping in that.
Yeah, that's great.
I can't remember his name, but he was happening. Really, yeah. Actually, that whole scene, right, the ska thing, the bass is really propulsive. Really.
Yeah, all those bands like The Beat, The English Beat, as you probably knew them in America.
Right, Selector.
The Specials, loads of stuff.
Yeah, what they call Twin Tone, right? Yeah.
Yeah, two-tone stuff.
That's it. Twin Tone was a Minneapolis label that didn't do ska, but hey, what the fuck? Music is music, right? So what was the first gig you saw?
Yeah, probably something to do with my father. I remember going to a lot of pubs with my dad because he would go and play, you know, jazz guitar with just guys that he knew, nothing serious, not proper concerts or anything, just kind of low-key. But I got into carrying his amp for him.
Yeah, the schlep. You learned the schlep early.
I was underage, and of course I was allowed in, you know, and I could drink and stuff. So there was a benefit to that as well, you know.
Right, and you were getting prac at one of the really overlooked or understudied skills you got to learn. Although us bass guys with the Class D and the fucking neodymium speakers, our schlep is getting a little smaller. There's these cats in Brighton, right? This guy named Alex making bareface speakers, 1,200 watts in a 40-pound box.
Yeah, it's all getting much smaller now with amps. It's amazing.
Love it. Yeah, and the speaker boxes.
And the speakers, yeah.
Yeah, right. Now, let me ask you this. What about after school, not graduate, but in the afternoon, bedroom, because you said you're 15 when you get this bass, so 15 sounds like high school, maybe bedroom band, basement band, garage band?
Yeah. I managed to put something together with a bunch of friends of mine, and we had this sort of room that we had access to in the school, and one of the sort of groovy teachers lived above this basement room, and he gave us the key and he let us use it to rehearse in.
Wow.
And we used to go and take bits of the school drum kit and our guitars and stuff and go down and just try and play, you know.
Sure.
And it went really well until the school caretaker found out about it and locked all our stuff in.
Oh, fuck. But that teacher was cool people. And I'm curious, were you guys trying to copy off records like me and D Boone, or were you trying to write original material?
Well, it was a mix of both. You know, someone would try and play something that he knew and show us, you know, show us what he knew, and we'd try and copy what was going on. And then one of the guys was a bit of a songwriter, and we would try and just sort of play along in our own way, you know, and it was probably a mess, but it was definitely a start, and it was great because we were doing it together, and that was important. Sure. It was a social thing as well.
Yeah, of course. And did this band have a name?
No, not really. It just, it was just like, it never got off never got off the launch pad, really. But
Well, as far as practice, it was off the launch pad, but you never did any gigs.
No, not initially, no. It was just sort of maybe the school hall or something silly, but it was great to have the opportunity to play regularly, you know, with people, and then...
No, absolute. That's why I ask about it. So what was your first gig? It was in the school hall?
Yeah, I think, well, you're going way back, and probably that was something I did, yeah. I mean, I definitely remember playing the school musical, and that was something that was really, in retrospect, really good experience, you know. I had to learn a load of songs.
Right.
And play them, you know, to an audience for sort of three or four nights in a row. And that was something that we'd never done before.
Sure. Happened. Okay, I want to play Harvest, not the Neil Young one.
Oh, carding their own wounds. Everyone is engaged.
And a lot of hugging too. But before I do that, there's one thing I just gotta do, baby. I need a cup of coffee and a king size cigarette. I need a cup of coffee and a king size cigarette. Well, there's a better way to end your live on day. Well, I haven't found it yet. I need a cup of coffee and a king size cigarette. I need a cup of coffee and a king size cigarette. I need a cup of coffee and a king size cigarette. Cup of coffee and a king size cigarette.
Sorry for your stupid words and sorry for your stupid thoughts. I'm sorry for everything you said. I'm sorry for not voting you in. But there's another dear soldier.
Thank you.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music started with Edwin Durant, Cove Tune, with Harvest, which I was enlightened to find out, a Ukrainian folk song, reinterpreted, of course. And then guided by voices, I Bet Hippie, brand new, Bob Pollard, you know, he's got to put out at least 10 albums a year, right? Incredible. I don't know what's in the water in Dayton, Ohio, but Jesus, can he pump the... You know, I was reading, he said why he sings with an England accent. He says, if I don't do that, people will think I'm a hick. So, thank you for that. You and your country, Edwin. Bob Pollard would have a, yeah, might put a kink in his songwriting flow. With the Eternal Return, brand new, The Void. Bombas Prendin with Weird and Casual from the archive. They just found another few thousand songs on cassette. And Andy Kerr, he's in Netherlands now, but original Vancouver. A cup of coffee and a king-size cigarette. After that, Tim Wholehouse, Sorry. And finally, Blue Mint from Edwin Jurgendal.
Yeah, Jurgendal, I think,
okay,
maybe.
Okay, but you would know probably better.
Well, not at all, because it's an Estonian name, so...
Yeah, but you played with the cat. Did he tell you his name?
Yeah, I just called him Robert.
Okay. So a Baltic name, yeah, that's great. You know, Raymond Pettibone, his mother's from Estonia. So
it's a great place, Tallinn. I don't know if you've ever been to Tallinn.
I drove through it from the. I took the ferry from Sweden, so I didn't get to play there, but I drove through it. It was very pretty, and I know it's the big town there, and I know some things because of Raymond. But okay. So you do the musical and shit. What do you do with music after you get out of school? Do you go to college and study music there?
No. I was really, really, really lucky when I was. I'd been playing the bass for a really short period of time. I met this really top London session bass player who was a friend of my sister's, my older sister's. Like, he was going out with one of their friends. And he came to me and said, oh, if you're interested in playing the bass, you know, I can show you a few things. So I didn't study formally, but I actually used to study with him. And it was amazing. He didn't take any money for it. I used to go around his house regularly. And he taught me all the things I needed to know I would have learned in college. He taught me how to read music. He taught me how to read chord symbols, you know, all the kind of working skills that you need. So I studied with him, you know, kind of like informally. It wasn't really study. It was just like, you do this, and then if you keep doing it, we keep going.
That sounds pretty practical and useful to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I was really, really lucky. You know, having got to 15 in a musical family and not had any tuition or any kind of encouragement, really. Well, I say no encouragement. I never did any formal lessons. And then,
there might be a trip about that, Colin, because, like, I had Ian MacKay on the show, and, like, he's trying to get his boy into, like, music, and, like, he doesn't want to do it either. I think maybe, with not consciously, but maybe I want to be my own man. Maybe.
Yeah. I guess it comes out when you want to do something, it comes out, doesn't it? If you want to take photographs or paint, you suddenly feel the urge and you want to do it. And I was just lucky that I had the help when I needed it, you know.
Okay.
I had the guidance, if you like. You
sure.
know, somebody along and showed me, because I didn't have a clue. And my dad tried, you know, my dad could play guitar pretty well, but it didn't work. It didn't work.
Some people think basses are guitars with four strings. That's not the truth. They're more like big violins without the chin part.
You know? Exactly.
Got to use them open strings. You know, who am I thinking of? Herbie Flowers. That's a great session man in England playing bass. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I kind of studied under him without him knowing it.
Right.
That tune, Jump Into the Fire with Harry Nilsson, he detunes while they're recording. You know, he detunes to do the solo and then tunes back up, right, because it's in D, so might as well get the string down there, the low string. So, okay, after the studying stuff, what would you start doing sessions? You join bands, side man, start your own band?
Well, I managed to meet a few people when I started to get paying gigs, you know, just like anything, bars and small places and places in London, you know. And then that kind of led me, my first sort of regular gig was actually in a sort of blues rock band doing like covers and Jimi Hendrix covers and things like that. Which wasn't really what I wanted to do, but it was great because it was so regular. They had so many gigs, you know, so it was, you know, it made me that was kind of my job, you know, playing the bass became my job. I was doing it enough, you know, with that and other things. So that's really what got me going. But I carried on studying and working on it and just taking anything that I could, really.
Noel Redding, Billy Cox.
Yeah, fantastic.
And Jimmy, too. Actually, Jimmy's on a lot of the recordings in the studio on bass. And it's not a bad stuff. I mean, it ain't James Jamerson, but it's at least rooted in that stuff. So, you know, it's not the left hand on a fucking bass synth.
Well, I've always loved the Band of Gypsies album.
Yeah, that was, absolutely.
That really blew my mind, you know. And actually, it was like bits of it are like fantastic. It's so ahead of its time, you know.
I love it. And you know, it's the fucking second set of the first gig.
Yeah, yeah, and
it's pretty balls out. You know, here we go, right out the fucking gate. Okay, what about recording?
No, I never really did a lot of recording, you know, various little things. I can remember my first experience with a bunch of friends was saving up enough money to go to an 8-track studio. And, you know, it took us ages to save up. And we would have an 8-hour session where you had to play live and then mix straight away. And, you know, you're lucky if you can do 3 songs.
Sure, sure. Like a gig in front of microphones.
Yeah, basically. But that was great, you know. I mean, it's so easy now with computers. You can just record everything all the time. But, you know, the idea of having to go to put everything on tape and just do it as it is, you know, that's great. That was great experience as well, you know. But, you know, we couldn't do it all the time.
Did you have red light fever?
I can remember, yeah. It's a weird state of mind. You have to really concentrate. And I wasn't used to that because playing live, it's something that comes and goes, you know.
Right.
And then you realize when you're recording, you're making a permanent thing. You're making a picture with the sound, you know, and you can't, you can change it, of course. You can edit a bit, but you want to try and get it as kind of focused as possible.
Yeah, it's kind of a gravestone, a keeper.
Exactly, yeah, that's a good one.
And so you realize the consequence, and it actually makes you play worse. You got to, let that go in a way.
Yeah. It's a paradox that you play better when you sort of don't care, isn't
right,
it?
Right. Oh, you didn't have it in record? Oh, fuck. Oh, now it's on record, the big bright light. Oh, man. But, you know, all those experiences add up to where you are now, so they're all important and stuff like that. What about touring? Now, you're talking about playing, bars and pubs and clubs and stuff. And what about getting in the van?
Yeah, my first gigs were in Scandinavia years ago. I remember that first time I sort of went on tour and going to Denmark for a couple of weeks, which was a ridiculous experience, you know, but it was such fun, you know. But it was a real thrill just to go, for me, to go to another country and play. And even though it was chaotic and mad, it was just like, you know, you get the bug, don't you? You know?
Yeah. I've had it about 45 years now. If you call a tour more than a month, I've done 67. Only 67 more to go. and there's no greater teacher, right, than being on the road and having to learn how to take care of yourself.
Yeah, it's all on-the-job training, isn't it? You can only prepare so much, really.
Right, because every venue is a different sitch, right? So you have to learn how you're going to work that room just for that night. You got to get there safe. You got to leave. Everything's got, you know, you don't want to donate, leave a trail of all your shit. You learn how to bring just enough stuff, right? Because extra stuff is going to get donated. It's just it's a trippy experience. And it goes way back to vaudeville, you know.
Yeah. I still love playing live. It's for me the best way to develop music as well, you know. It's where it's at, really.
Okay, and in these situations, you were helping somebody out, right? When this wasn't your music.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was really just a bass player, you know. It's not my own stuff.
Oh wow, you don't think that the bass can be a composer too?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, I guess no one was telling me what to play. It's just.
It's not traditional to use the bass as a composition instrument, but. I'm trying to change it.
Yeah. Well, there's such a strong thing between the voice and the bass, I've discovered, you know. Like, when I work with singers, you know, that they're really, really talking about, play this so I can do this. You know,
yeah.
You really have to be sensitive.
Absolutely. But James Jamerson said that's how he got his bass lines. He listened to the vocal line.
Yeah. In fact, the track Harvest you played, the
yeah.
Ukrainian folk song, so...
Yeah.
Everything was written around Inna Kovtun's vocals. There was nothing going on with that music other than her voice to start with.
Okay.
So we did it from the bass up, you know, making a connection between the bass and the voice and taking it from there. And that was when I started working with her. That was a great lesson.
Oh, beautiful. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, April 15, 2021. Dish Wap Pedro Show, special guest Colin Edwin. Hold tight for hour two. April 15, 2021. It's the second hour off of Pedro Show.
everybody wants to know the under fire, the mortal glow. Recognition, recognizance, and will one ever be oneself again? A twirl of beneficiaries, super colliding indelicately. Name withheld, age withheld, and will I ever be with I again? Now we're returning to the fold, and I am learning to uphold my lower jaw, to wrench it shut, 'cause there's just so much that I cannot control. Join the avant-garde and see the world. I know you don't believe a single word, but I am drinking to your health. Pull yourself together, back yourself. Objects of adolescent desire. Think about that. An apartment in the city. Any apartment, any city. Once I professed to believe, now I think that I can truly see. Just keep falling off the shelf. Pull yourself together. Back yourself. Back yourself.
sista gången. Sista gången nu. Sista gången. Sista gången nu. Sista gången nu. Sista gången nu.
Watt for Pedro Show start off the second hour with Burt Belief, Until the Stars Go Out. After that, Ben Salter out of Tasmania, Back Yourself, live in Japan, actually. Justice Yeldon from Sydney after that with The Quintessential Fiction. Water Boogie System, Trap Pup Gang, Tommy Dahil out of Alaska with The Wrong Song. That's a great title. And Obaka with Serving the Alibi. You know, you said something off air about James Jamerson there, Colin. Let the listeners hear.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were just talking about his lines and how he focused on the voice. And, you know, I was saying he's like the godfather, you know. There was bass before Jamerson and bass after Jamerson. It was, you know, the first sort of all those melodic lines, which are like the sort of hook for the records. It's such a powerful concept that he came up with, you know.
And he comes from the stand-up bass. That's why he played with one finger. But also a lot of open strings because of that experience. He's a transition guy. He's a pioneer guy because they're moving over, that right? They can't really record that thing right. So there's this new instrument, and a lot of people were thinking it was a toy, right? Leo didn't even fucking play. He made it for his friends, so it was easy to tour with. But it ends up having its own thing. And James Jamerson is one of the reasons why, I think. I think it's still fine in itself, I think. And one of the things I was mentioning in the last hour was a composition tool instead of the last thing. Unless it's a reggae song, I guess. No, I remember writing this guy 8 songs, and he still called them bass lines. He wouldn't call them verses and choruses and bridges and intros. No, they were just bass lines. Like Chico Hamilton not being able to get songwriting credit because he played the drums. Well, those notes.
A tough one with the bass.
Okay, go
on. You're sort of in a, you know, if you're doing the job right, sometimes you're not doing anything noticeable, you know.
Absolutely.
That's a fact, you know.
Because you're glue, right? You're fitting everything together. You're like a mortar or grout between tiles and bricks.
Exactly. You're the glue. So it's an important job, and it's a judgment call a lot of the time, isn't it? You're having to sort of make the judgment of note and note length and all that stuff, and it's nothing particularly exciting. Like whacking the shit out of a drum kit.
No. Actually, you can be mistaken too because of the low wavelengths. What 30 feet from your amplifier is much different than 1 foot from your amplifier.
Yeah.
And so, actually, sometimes it's good to get another opinion. Am I Bogarting? No, it's a trippy thing. I'm really glad. D. Boone's mom put me on. I mean, the politics of bass, too. You, like you were saying, you look good making others look good. I like that. It's not so me. It's you're aiding abetting the tune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a backbone thing, isn't it? It's a sort of somebody described it as sometimes like when you're in a restaurant and there's a really good waiter, you don't know he's there because he's just doing his job unobtrusively.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he ain't fucking yammering and driving you crazy, and then he ain't, like, never around to help you. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Look, all these projects you gave me. I want to play this metallic Taste of Blood. I mean, what's the other Taste of Blood? The salty one? I mean, what project was this?
Metallic Taste of Blood. So it's me and Araldo Bernocchi, who's an Italian guitarist and we put the band together, and the whole idea really is there's the feeling of when, you know, like when you bite your lip, you know, and you can taste the blood, right?
Yeah.
And you know it's wrong, but you sort of enjoy the taste. Metallic Taste of Blood is like that. It's discordant music, and it's like it's unsettling music, but there's something about it that I find really enjoyable to do and also to listen to. It's like that whole thing, you know, when something's wrong, but it still feels right.
Yeah, Mr. Poe wrote an essay. It was called The Imp of Perverse. You will think the wrong thought just because you're... We got a saying here. Well, not a saying. I guess it'd be a Zen Cohen sort of. Why does a dog lick his balls? Because he can. Here, let's listen.
じっと手を見る。 丈夫、大丈夫、もう大丈夫、じっと手を見る。
Yeah, when they ban something, it always goes up in popularity. It's a guarantee, isn't it?
Well, for Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with something you shouldn't like, but you do. Metallica, Taste of Blood, and Sectile. That's a good word. I never heard of it before, but it sounds like it could be a real one. Waku Waku Kingdom after that with Doggy Bag. Some stuff from Hokkaido. My buddy Nez, an Irish cat who moved to Hokkaido about 13 years ago, and he sent me some music that's happening over there in the live houses. Car Thief School with House, Slang with Little Birth, and Nango with Kudan. And then finally, Twinscapes with The Perfect Tool. What's Twinscapes, Carl?
Well, so Twinscapes is a band I have together with a really top Italian bass player called Lorenzo Feliciati. And it's basically two bass and drums, you know. So all the sounds, the scape sounds and the sort of things that you might think are keyboards, they're usually made on the bass guitar.
Wow. Okay, yeah, some of those guys. I noticed, well, there was a scene about 15 years ago called Jazz Chord there, and a lot of funky bass players out of Italy. A lot of slapping, a lot of, I don't want to say fusion.
Oh, it's a really musical place. I've been spending a lot of time there. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, the guys can play the fucking asses off. Yeah, and also weird times. You know, playing in nines, sevens, fives.
Yeah, I think Italy, you know, it's the place of natural creativity. There's a lot of creative people there that I've met. You know, not just musicians, but artists and photographers and... I think it's because they spend such a lot of time cooking.
Yeah. Well, you know what I heard about that? No, was the mamas.
They're thinking about it all the time.
Well, but I play in a band. I saw you to my night with two Italian guys. And when they're kids, the ma don't kick them out of the kitchen. You know, like most cultures, right? They, no, you help. Go on.
It's healthy to do that.
So tell me about some of these other projects we already heard, like Burt Belief in Obaki.
Obake was well, in fact, we're hopefully going to resurrect Obake, but it's me and Eraldo Bonocchi from Metallic Taste of Blood again, but a singer, Leth, who I work with in another band called ORK.
Yeah.
And it was a very specific idea to have I playing a down-tuned bass and Eraldo's playing a baritone guitar, so we're really playing low-end stuff. And it was a mixture of mainly sort of heavy riffs and then real ambient, spacey things going on. And I loved playing with that band. And when we did certain gigs, people would kind of go crazy. There was something about it. It was like people would lose their inhibitions.
Yeah.
And that was a really powerful thing that we had going on. We didn't do enough with it. We did a couple of European tours and a few records, and then it sort of petered out. But I think we're thinking that post-pandemic, this is going to be something, you know, to help people get over their ambitions. Yeah. Getting over that, sorry, inhibitions.
Yeah. And Burt Belief?
So Burt Belief was a thing I put together with a guitarist called John Durant from Boston. And it's just somebody I have a really good musical connection with. He's a really interesting guitar player. I'm really lucky in that I keep meeting guitarists that don't just play sort of standard guitar. You know, they treat the instrument as something really different. So John's a really interesting approach. He does a lot of effects and makes a lot of soundscapes and really deep kind of atmospheres going on with his music. So we have a really good connection, and getting together with him is just effortless. You know, we come up with loads of ideas all the time.
And that first thing I played at the beginning of the show with just your name?
Yeah, well, you know, occasionally as a bass player, because I'm used to working with different people all the time, I like to just see what I come up with on my own.
Right. And do you work other machines besides the bass?
Yeah, I love programming rhythms, so most of it came out of me sitting and programming rhythms and playing bass lines and then, you know, building up from there, and then eventually getting a friend of mine to sing over what I'd done. But yeah, it's good, you know, just to sort of retreat into your own thing sometimes.
Absolutely. You know, the search for your own voice is forever That's what makes life a classroom, right? We're at the end of the second hour, April 15, 2021, Dish Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Colin Edwin. Hold tight for our feet! April 15, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Happen many times. chunk of virgin clay. I am the hunter stalking mine. I am the joy of being seen. I and thou are traveling on. I am a chunk of virgin clay. I am the hunter stalking mine.
Through the seasons of my solitude,
I am the joy of being seen. I and thou are traveling.
Walk for Pedro show. Excuse me. Start off the third hour with O-R-K. Kneeling to Nothing. And then some music from Italy. I just had a Giuseppe from the Lepers. Way down south where the heel is, the big town's Bari, huh? And these guys grew up and they started their own little label and ended up doing over 60, 70 albums. You know, it's the same five or six guys and they just make different bands and recordings, you know, because they can. And so El Saab with the Somnia, Irmal Victor with the Passandro Como Samu, Il Cloro with the Ullilona, Glut from, fuck, this got 20 letters in it. Okay. Duasemi Colce Eessen Vertedas. Thank you. Grazie. Eternal Return after that with No Man. Eternal Return. What project is this here, Colin?
Eternal Return. So it was something I was invited to do, and with Robert Jurgendal, the Estonian guy who I was talking about earlier. And the idea was like, it really appealed to me. It was a bit like in the old days, you know, doing a jazz album, you know, everybody just getting together and recording and seeing what happened around some really basic ideas. So,
you're talking like Miles Smiles Around the Corner, where they take a big old jams and start cutting it up after?
Yeah, but it wasn't really so much like that. There were a few basic ideas going on, but the thing is, it was about really just being together. We didn't really know each other. I knew Robert, but the guys, apart from Robert, I didn't know the other guys at all, and they didn't know me, and it was all like, let's all meet. They're all from everywhere. So Paul Godwin's from California, Miguel Noyer's from Venezuela. We had a drummer from, he's a Berlin resident, but he's originally from Venezuela, Miguel Toro. And it was just like one of those things, go in and do it in the moment. And I'm really pleased with how it came out, you know.
Sure, sure.
And also, well, the thing is now, you know, the idea of going, meeting a bunch of people from all over the world in a studio somewhere just seems like an impossibility with COVID, you know. So it was a document of before all these problems that we've got now started, you know.
Yeah, I see. I mean, actually, I think any time you fucking make music with somebody, it's a kind of document.
Whether
it's captured or not, but it's bitching if it is captured. And this acronym, ORK, what's it stand for?
Okay, so in Italy, the word for killer whale is orca.
Yeah.
And two of the guys in the band are Italian. And I think they got drunk one night and they wanted to call the band Orca because it's something about a killer whale. It's a beautiful animal, you know, but it's dangerous.
We got him here.
Yeah, but that was the kind of feeling they wanted to get across with the music, with the name of the band. You know, it's a beautiful thing. It has moments of beauty, but moments of, you know, danger and moments of, kind of where it's a bit tricky, you know, not sure about it. And you might make you feel a little bit apprehensive. So they wanted to call the band Orca. I said, you can't call the band Orca. And in the end, they settled on ORK, which was a bad idea because it's very un-Googleable.
Now, it is edgy about those things. They're incredibly smart, but they can be very, you know, they live in things we call pods, like packs. And some of them go cannibal. And they'll, you know, most of them eat jellyfish and shit, but some will eat the seals. And then they get all kinds of sadistic on this shit. They belly flop on them. They throw them around. They teach their kids to, like, torture them before you kill them. It's a really strange behavior. Not all of them, though. Like, we got whale watching, you know, I'm in the harbor of Los Angeles here, San Pedro. And sometimes, it's the wrong pod. They'll, like, rip open the seal's throat and spread to all the people with the blood and shit.
You just reminded me of one of the times I sat down with my son when he was really little and I showed him this nature program. So, you know, you put things on for kids so you can go and do something else. I managed to put on the Blue Planet episode where the killer whales, like, kill something. And I'm in the kitchen. He comes in bawling his eyes out.
I mean, it's incredible what they do to these little seals. It's like, cats will do it with mice. It seems like more intelligent, whatever, they get into some pretty, you know, about chimpanzees and monkeys, right?
Yeah,
every few months they go and just slaughter, rip their hearts and brains out, and then they go back to being calm. It's, but anyway, you know, band names are trippy. But again, it's a collection of cats coming together, and Italian guys again. That's great. I got some more. You gave me a couple songs of ORK and Taste of Blood. Matak, Taste of Blood. So I want to play those right now, right? I love this title, Epistemus.
Thank you. pjesma je Britva. Govori o jednoj osječkoj djevojčici.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, from Pedro Show, last music for this edition, Metallic Taste of Blood with Ipsissimus.
You got it.
Got that right. It's not a business, people. I'm a fuck. I wanted to read that, okay? So you know where my head's at. And then we had Weishtalka after that. Weishtakla. Some Slavic stuff. With Britva live. And then Hans Rotten out of Switzerland with some improvised E-bass pain reliever. I think it's one of them E-bows on a bass guitar. Where you don't. It's magnetic field, right? It just keeps a sustaining.
Ebo's a beautiful sound.
Yeah, that
it.
Cat in Roxy Music, the guitar man, right? He was big on that.
Phil Manzanera.
That's it. Great, great player. Great. And I heard he has a beautiful studio in London. And then finally, ORK with Dirty Rain. So, Colin, your plans nowadays, well, of course, the situation, but you're looking forward. Nothing was canceled. Everything just postponed.
Yeah. Well, I've been working on a new record with ORK, which is going to come out next year. So that's nearly finished. I'm going to resurrect Obake with Raldo Bonocchi, so we're definitely going to do some more. And I was doing, you know, just people, I'm lucky, people do get in touch with me over the internet and want me to play bass on their tracks, and that happens, you know, pretty regularly. So I'm busy with some tracks somebody sent me today. That's been cool. And just whatever comes along, you know. I mean, I'm hoping we can get out and play again. I'm really missing playing live, you know.
So you trade files. Is this how you did the ORK album?
Yeah, we had to do it like that because basically there's me in the UK. There's Pat Mastelotto lives in Texas, and the other two guys are in Bologna. Okay. So it's the only way to record.
My two guys are in Bologna too.
Oh, right.
Paolo Mangardi.
Okay. Oh, beautiful place. You know it, right?
It's the oldest university in Europe, right?
Yeah, it's a fantastic town.
Yeah. They call it the train town. It's in the middle. So when you do this, like, for example, the ORK, what came first? Was it the drums?
Well, usually I'm able to get over to Bologna and, you know, kick the whole thing off so there's at least three of us there. And we sketch things out, and then we send it to Pat, and he plays drums, and then, you know, rinse and repeat over and over. You know, he might have some ideas for the arrangement, and it sort of goes on from that. And, you know, we've got a bit of a methodology for doing it, so it works for us, you know.
Sure.
It doesn't work for everything.
No, but, you know, if it's going to rain lemons, make some fucking lemonade, right?
Exactly.
Or, you know, have a good cry and feel sorry. I really get tired of that shit, you know. I mean, we could have had a world war. I mean, if it's a lame thing, I understand. But, man, just think if it was 1941. Man, we would have had to, like, take 5, 6, 7 years off.
I always think about my grandmother. She was born in 1901, right? So she went through World War One, you know, with her friends disappearing. The first pandemic, the Spanish flu. Then there was the Great Depression. Then there was World War II. Then there was the Cold War. You know, I think 1901 was the heaviest year to be born in, if you look at it like that. If you look at all the disasters in the 20th century, you'd have been unlucky.
That makes a lot of sense, Carl. Makes a lot of sense. So I'm not trying to say, you know, it's not lame, but we do got to be grateful and try to do what we can in the meantime.
I agree.
My pop said, a half-ass in the meantime is better than fucking, what was the other thing you told me? You can wish in one hand and shit in the other. And you tell me you tell me which one fills up first.
That's a good one.
He worked in the engine room of a boat, so it was kind of pragmatic. Gotcha. Like that. Beautiful to have you on. When you get these records done, Colin, will you come back on the show so we can listen and talk about them?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to, Mike. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, beautiful. Thanks, fellow bass brother. And
all right.
We'll get more into the composing with bass next time. I wanted to get more of that in that with you, but we'll wait till next time. People, April 15, 2021, Dishwap Pedo Show. Keep your powder dry.